when we talk about efficiency in this context, what are we talking about?
Okay, so, you know, one thing, we could sort of go back to some of the people that founded industrial engineering, practice of it. I think there's some interesting stories there. You know, there's a guy named Frederick Taylor, who was an industrial era person who's kind of started the thinking of scientific management. He worked, I think, for Bethlehem Steel. But Frederick Taylor was sort of watching people mining ore, I think, and noticed that there were sort of all these different shovel sizes, and he began to think, what's a way that this group of people can become more efficient in extracting ore out of this mine? There's naturally the human reaction to it of, boy, that's a lot of control. You know, shouldn't each person be able to choose what the tools that help them make their work more efficient? And I would certainly feel that way, and I can imagine sometimes around hospitals, when people start talking about efficiency, maybe it sort of cramps their style. But he was thinking somewhat about perhaps the group being efficient. And maybe it's the case that within a hospital, what makes an individual inefficient can make a group inefficient. And so you might think about a resident who badly wants to please his or her supervisors, and so puts an imaging order in and tries to get it escalated up in the queue.
So it's his or her own focus on what do I need, what do I want, rather than what does the hospital need.
Right. And so his, by escalating something in the queue, that makes the resident more efficient. And residents aren't the only people who maybe do that, but that maybe puts a false prioritization on things in the queue that makes the hospital less efficient. So that's an example of Frederick Taylor and his early thinking and maybe one application of how it applies today. There's another guy, or there was a couple actually, Frank and Lillian Gilbreth. And if you've ever heard of the movie Cheaper by the Dozen, there's an old version of Cheaper by the Dozen that's sort of based on the Gilbreths, and then there's a newer version with Steve Martin that's a little looser with the details, but they're sort of the early thinkers of time and motion studies, and they actually did have a dozen children because they thought, well, everything is cheaper when you buy it by the dozen, so let's have 12 kids. And then
and they applied engineering principles to running the household.
That's right. But in the factory, they thought about how do you break down all the different steps in a manufacturing process. So, you know, if I'm going to screw something into a part, there's a rotation on my wrist, right? And that's an element of work. And they called those elements thirblegs, which is their name backwards. And so they had all these thirblegs with the standard time that it should take to do all these things. And that has gone by the wayside somewhat in manufacturing, but it's sort of had a reemergence as we think about iPads and Android phones. So there's a feature, I think, in Android phones now that rather than typing on the keyboard, you can slide your finger from place to place. And so you're not picking up your finger as you go from place to place. And that's sort of the same type of, some engineer for Google had that idea, and it makes typing so much faster, right? So those are some places where efficiency analysis was first applied in America and how it can make its resurgence. But I think that issue of what can I, a hospitalist, do to make my own personal practice more efficient is always beneficial. But we also have to keep in mind, what are any of those things that I might do to make myself efficient going to make the group less efficient?
So it requires a focus not just on what am I doing, but what's the job we're collectively doing, and how do I relate to others, and how are we going to interact, especially in a complex setting such as a hospital.
It is a very complex environment, and everything has a cascade of, every action has a reaction. There are downstream effects to everything that we do, and a patient is being cared for by so many different people. So what might make me efficient might make the nurses work less efficient, and because maybe I'm depending on nurses to take care of, because maybe the practice is depending on nurses who are taking care of my colleagues' patients, that can make their work less efficient. So, you know, there's all these questions of what's the appropriate census level for a hospitalist. And there are ways that an individual could say, well, maybe if I round a little differently, I can manage 13 patients instead of 12. And those are things that we maybe need to always be thinking about. But at the same time, what are things that the group as a whole could do to say, all right, what could we do to maybe make our average reasonable, like, to cap our practices census on, to raise that from 50 to 60?
You're just giving me a little flavor of a very rich and complex field of engineering, and you're bringing it into the hospital. Has there been some resistance, or Do you have a way of kind of paving the way in conversations with physicians about what you hope to contribute and how, you know, you're not trying to turn them into automatons or cogs on a...
Absolutely, yeah. You know, whenever I talk about Little's Law, there's always that first comment that, well, patients aren't widgets, and I need to be willing to listen to those comments. I always want to reassure people within the hospital that I don't want to turn patients into widgets. I want to help. I want to be thought of as an axe sharpener. That I'm the one who's helping people do their work more easily.
If they have a sharper axe, the tree will come down.
Absolutely. But I think one thing that's easy to do is to, you know, if you only listen to one audience about their problems, then you can end up trying to do things that are going to adversely affect other stakeholders, right? So a nurse might begin to complain about maybe a sharding behavior that some doctors have. And I could go into the medical record system and add a feature that requires the docs to chart differently. And if I don't listen to the docs and get their perspective, I could end up making everybody's world worse. And one thing, from time to time in engineering publications, you'll see models where people have worked to make nurses' or doctors' schedules more satisfying. And that is certainly something that I have the tools to do and want to do. But we also, I think, have to listen to the patients.
If we talk about hospitalist practice in particular, is there more to be said about, you know, the balances, the trade-offs, getting people to accept what you have to offer, specifically in a hospitalist practice context?
Well, I think there are two things about a hospitalist practice that can make it easier to work with hospitalists. And one is the size, and that hospitalists, I think, are often... They're probably the largest group of people taking care of patients. So you have economies of scale there. And, you know, the economies of scale at a large hospital like Northwestern are greater than the economies of scale at a small community hospital. But when you talk about designing innovative workflow schedules, when you have a lot of people, that makes forecasting, you're maybe able to spread variability out a little bit more. And so that economy of scale is a really great advantage. The other is just the character and personality of hospitalists. You know, they tend to be more quality-minded, and they sit at the intersection of so many different specialties in the hospital. They see so much more